Blog
NCWCC Blog Talk Radio Show. We're live from Snow Mountain, Georgia. Today is November 12, 2008. And our topic for today is NCWCC aspirations and changing the face of contracting and construction. If we are able to create change, it is important to acknowledge and accept that our experiences as women of color in businesses are different. So therefore, we have to attract a different value system. As a business, we have to be able to utilize and form new models that is cooperative and supportive to the needs of women of color. I'd like to let everybody know that we've been airing live for several weeks now, and we have been very blessed to have an enormous amount of callers calling in and with an enormous amount of experience, and have had a lot of great information. And that's great because we have great information, but we need to take that information, and now it's time for us to run with it. I want to I have callers in from several areas of the country. 330 area code, somebody here from Atlanta, 404, welcome caller from 219, caller from 952, welcome. And we have a caller, I believe, at 000, so not really sure what that is. So callers, you all are all welcome. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Okay. All right, and as we know, that as we're moving toward the end of the year, and we have discovered from last week's guest that the coalition is on the right path into becoming a very strong, viable organization that pretty much will corner the market and creating a different style of presenting ourselves. The woman that was on was Lauren Sugarman. Her organization had been around for starting as next year, 30 years. So I think it gives us at least a signification that the executive director and founder of Chicago Women of Trades think that we're on the right course here. And so I wanted to let everybody know that we are different from anybody else because our experiences are different, and that's why this talk show it's so important to be able to have a common understanding that all of us is in this together. You know, this economy crashed, everybody crash. There was nobody that was not affected. And that's why I want to share with everybody that if you do not believe that the construction and contracting industry is not the pulse of this country, then you know, you guys, you know, are sadly mistaken. Is that we can have some shining examples of all the factories and businesses that are closing when the construction industry started to slow a couple of years ago. You know, you have linen and things that are closing their doors because the houses are not being built. The women are not going shopping, right? And they're not buying, you know, things that go into that house. And the material that's made to make that product is not being made. And so manufacturing jobs go. So we are changing the everything has died to the level that now we can resurrect it and become clean and have a very good start. So caller from the I have a guest host that, you know, has been nice enough to tell me that they would sit in with me and work with me on a lot of calls. So I want to appreciate them on that. And in Minnesota, we have our founder on the line, Maggie Bowens. How you doing? I'm sorry, Maggie Freeman. How are you doing, Ms. Freeman?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm blessed to be here. Thank you for all of that. And area code 404-512.
Hello. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
It's Nicole with Giovanna.
Oh, okay. Nicole, how are you doing, ma'am?
Hey, I'm good. Good.
Very good.
How are you today?
Wonderful. Just highly blessed and truly favored. Or is that, yeah, truly favored and highly blessed. Either way. God is good. How about that? And caller from 330-703.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I tell you what, it's just good to be in the land of the living, especially with the economy the way it is. But like I said last time, it's time for a change. And the wine is that 10 years ago. We finally got it. So.
Okay, and we have our executive director, 651 area code. How are you doing, Ms. Bowen? We have our executive director from 651 area code. How are you doing, Ms. Bowen?
I'm doing fine. How are you
very
doing?
Very good. Thank you. And then we have a caller from 952-261.
Yes. Hi. How are you, Karima?
All right, Michelle. Thank you for coming in and joining us and helping us with the show today. And I have
my pleasure. I'm really glad to be here.
Okay. And then we have a thank you. And we have a caller from 000. I don't get that one, but.
Karima, this is Jamie. I think that's blocked or something.
Okay. We have our guest on. That's our first guest for the day, and I'd like to introduce Jamie from Aflac. We are working with Aflac to have an association discount for all of our member partners, and she was kind enough to sit down, and I think we have a terrific packet that is going to be critiqued for women. Some of the things that we had discussed, and ladies, this is very important, is the cancer packet that you have for, you know, for everybody, but, you know, for our women. And since we were having that discussion that, what, one out of five, Jamie, women
One out of three.
One out of three have been diagnosed with some form of breast cancer?
Yes, some form of cancer, yes.
Okay, could you kind of can we go over some of the things that you and I had talked about of this week in our association package? I think we're doing a terrific job in creating a very strong membership package for not just, I think it's a model to understand that each organization should support its participants. If people are going to walk with you, then you should support them with a great packet of opportunities and things that normally you would never get. So you can talk about Aflac a little bit about what some of the levels in which we're going to be dealing with on some of the policies that we're buying into.
Okay. Well, as you know, Karima, most people know of Aflac by representation of the duck, the commercials. And you see on the commercials that it says ask for it at work, but a lot of people don't understand what that means. What we do is we bring catastrophic programs into the workplace. And what that it does is it designs a program to cover family expenses that are associated with serious illnesses or injuries. So, for instance, we were discussing the cancer policy. one in three women are diagnosed with cancer, one in two men. And what Aflac does is it offers a policy where upon diagnosis, you are paid an initial treatment benefit. Upon diagnosis, you have a benefit that is paid, a lump sum amount that is paid, and then there's an initial treatment benefit that is paid. All of our benefits are paid directly to the policy holders. So whether you have insurance or you don't have insurance, we pay directly to the policyholder. So therefore, if the policyholder is not able to go to work because of what has happened with them, whether it be an illness or an injury, they still have some type of monetary, some cash basically coming in that they can use to still pay their rent or their mortgage, their electricity, gas bill, whatever it may be, because as you know, just because you're injured and you're not able to, or sick and not able to go to work, your bills still keep coming in and you still have to put food on your table. And so what Aflac does is they pay their benefits directly to the policyholder in the event of these catastrophic events so that they can maintain a pretty decent lifestyle.
And as we know, as some of us are business owners on the phone, that we are the sustainable income for our businesses, and yet even though our company may continue to grow in its sickness while you're sick, you know, there was something that you stated, or I think it was Michelle stated, that there's something that we're missing in terms of what we should count, and I think that's like the quality of life, or I think we were talking about
quality of life, and then your secondary income. If one person is injured or sick, many times that second person has to be the caregiver of that person. So therefore, then it affects your income in two ways, because then that secondary person may not be able to go to work either.
And so therefore, as business owners, a lot of the organizations, something that you have shared with us also is that people like ABC, AGC, they have insurance brokers that broker the policies, and we're not brokering the policy as a coalition. We're actually getting an association discount, I believe, up to 30%. So this could be very easy for a lot of the business owners who have to drop their health insurance in order to even, you know, maintain their business structure, because right now we have to become creative in how we maintain our business.
Right, and the benefit with the benefit that Aflac offers to the business owner is that it doesn't cost the business owner anything to offer it to their employees. It's all strictly voluntary for the employees, and basically, once they have at least three people that are interested in any of our policies, that gives them that group rate, that up to 30% discount.
And then we also have the other interest. I think Nicole has a very nice staff of individuals as well. And, Nicole, I think that's something that that you all could be looking at as a business as well. But we really want to keep everything in our association, but we do want everybody to know that this is the type of areas in which we really have to strongly talk about. And this is what I call succession planning. We have a caller in from 818 area code.
Yeah.
Okay. We have Mr. and Mrs. Coleman on. Welcome to the call. And Nicole?
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I had you on mute.
Okay. We're just talking about the what Jamie was talking about as far as policies were concerned, and how this affects, you know, small business owners like ourselves. That, you know, you can offer, when you have a better package to offer your employees, you get the better employees as well. And I think, Jamie, you said something about those employees could also be 1099 individuals, right?
Right. We can offer, as long as the small business has at least one employee, we can also offer it, which is a W-2, we can also offer it to 1099s, which are independent contractors. And the thing with when we're talking about catastrophic events happening, when someone has to be off of work and they run out of sick time, if they have sick time, what ends up happening is they start going to family members for those financial obligations. They may go into their savings. That gets dwindled down. They eventually may go for a loan. okay, if the bank will give them a loan, you know how the times are now.
Right.
Eventually they start coming to family, and I don't know about you, but it's hard enough for us to support our own families, let alone extended family. And then eventually what they do is they'll be asking the employer, can you keep paying me? And there aren't many employers out there that can continue to offer a paycheck to an employee that's not working. And that's why it's so important to have a supplemental program like what we have for these catastrophic events.
And you know what, I think what having you on is so good to have you talk about this, because until you're actually affected by it, I mean, my sister was just diagnosed a couple months ago with second stage breast cancer. And as a business owner, you're right. I mean, right now we have regular insurance, but we don't have, you know, the type of insurance that would probably, you know, most people with insurance is so expensive. I mean, you know, those bills start piling up, and I'm sure having that supplemental insurance would ease my mind right now. But until it actually happens to you and to a family member and somebody, you know, close to you, most of us feel like, you know, that's for other people to get. And that may happen to somebody else, but it's really real what happening in families now. And that statistic, I didn't realize it was 1 out of 3 people. That's staggering to believe
yes.
that.
That's
yes,
just the
it
and it's 1 out of 2 with men. And it is what happens, what I tell a lot of my clients, because I go to businesses, you know, trying to implement this. And what I tell them, they'll say, oh, we don't need that. We've got great insurance. We don't need that. And my response is always, when you call me because you need me, it's generally too late. Because at that point, once you have those conditions, then it's very hard to get any type of insurance. So you want to go into it. You want to prepare for the worst in hopes that you won't have to use it. I'd rather pay not to have to use it than to not pay for it and then need it.
Right.
Hmm.
I have a question. I'm calling from Minnesota. My name is Michelle for the Aflac representative. I know Aflac has been in business for many years, and I was just wondering what other changes have been made in the company to better strengthen its networking and relationships with its customers?
Well, we're national, and we're also in Japan. We are in 1 in 4 homes in Japan. We've got a great presence in Japan. We're working to get our presence that high here in the United States as well. Basically, we're just really training our field staff to just get out there and to serve the client. It's not about the money. It's about taking care of your clients, letting them know what we have, what a great product we have, and that it's there for, it's not an expensive product. We are
right.
We're number one in our field. All of our products are what we call portable and guaranteed renewable. What that means is once you have it, you can always keep it. So let's say your employee happens to change companies. They can still take it with them as long as they continue to pay the premium. Their premium will remain the same, okay? Their premium will remain the same. As long as they continue to pay it, they will continue to have coverage. It's guaranteed renewable no matter how often it's having to be used. And then the portability, that means that they can take it with them. So that's what we're trying to do. What we're doing more of is getting out there. You see our commercials more, letting people know about us. We're out there knocking on doors every day. I mean, sometimes I walk into a business and they say, you're the 5th Aflac representative I've seen today. And so then I say, oh, good, then it means I'm doing my job. So why don't you have it yet?
One of the things we talked about, Jamie, was for the coalition as well, is to have, I guess, term life and short term as well. I think those are the three products that we were looking at in terms of our overall view of what we can offer immediately for our individuals. The cancer was the most important. And then the other thing is everybody that's listening in, one of the things that we are doing as part of our youth program is called the Youth Build Foundation Program. And I have Mr. and Mrs. Coleman in from Nashville that has the YMP program, but I was going to have them come on just a little bit. But on that rider policy, One of the things we wanted to do is provide a policy for the young folks that are probably in the Diamond in the Rough programs, and then the Youth Build program that we're pulling together for our youth, and for the YMP program, that each one of us, Nicole and I were talking about this, that, you know, we made our decision that we're going to do more for our community and provide Jamie that rider policy if we are to mentor these young people. So that up until they turn 18, they can cash out, I guess, at 25 and have some kind of money for their term. And this is me just being dangerously listening to information, but that is what we were – that is one of the goals that we want to do. I wanted to let everybody know that is one of the charges that we have to keep, is to take our community back and offer this, because we had a tragedy in our family where the young man couldn't even get buried, my mom, and folks got together and, donated money to get this young man at 22 years old, just to get him buried, because, you know, he was just in a crossfire and useless killing. But that's one of the things that we were going to really work on, is that rider policy and being able to be a guardian or work with the parents and commit ourselves to these kids. Just like you have little kids on TV, they, you know, 6 cents a day or, you know, feed a child. Well, I don't think $4, or was it $4.08 a month could keep a kid, you know, with at least some kind of, you know, assurance of, you know, of a policy, I guess. And I think that was one of the things we talked about.
What we were talking about, Karima, was the what we call the T25 policy, which is mm-hmm. a life insurance policy for those under the age of 25. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it is very inexpensive, again, offered through payroll deduction. It's generally about $4.08 a pay period when you're looking at semi-monthly payments. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on the ratings and all of that. So I can't really quote the rates, but that
yeah,
is
not,
about...
I'm not trying to lock you in on the air
okay.
right now. Later. But the other product that we were talking about, and I can go into this last little part because I know you said you had a 6 o'clock, and I appreciate you calling in, the specified health that you were talking about?
Right. The specified health event is what we call our SHE policy. That's our intensive care policy. That's a policy that covers if someone has a heart attack, a stroke, goes into a coma, has to have a major organ transplant, ends up in intensive care for any reason whatsoever, it pays a daily rate while they're in intensive care, ranging from $400 to $700 a month along those lines. It pays a daily rate. It pays a first occurrence benefit. Someone has a heart attack, they're paid $5,000 because of that first occurrence. Then they later, sometimes you have a stroke or a heart attack. Later on, you may have another one. Then there's that was the initial diagnosis or an initial event. Then you can have a repeat event, which is about $2,500. But what it does, again, if someone has a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, they're going to be home for a minute, which means they're not going to be able to go to work and all of that type of thing. And so their insurance, if they have insurance, will cover their hospital bills. But, again, the mortgage payment still comes in, you know, the household bills, food, all of that still has to happen. And so what we pay out in that in those events will help to sustain the family. And also one of the things I didn't mention, Karima, is that Aflac is known for paying their policies very quickly. We generally pay our claims in 4 to 7 business days. So they have a very quick turnaround, and we pay more in our claims than our top 5 competitors make in premiums off of their policies.
Wow.
We're a very strong company. We're very financially strong. Even in this economy, we're doing very well. We're still there for our clients, and we're still out there, you know, to let everybody know what we're doing.
Okay. And I know I really appreciate the time that you gave us. I know that you have a 6 o'clock appointment. Certainly appreciate it. We'll be putting all our products on our site with
with our health package that we're putting together. So I certainly look forward to working with you on producing a phenomenal way of bringing a type of change that we need to have and mirror corporate America. You know, this show, it's about, you know, women of color in business, contracting, construction, and we have to mirror ourselves as a Fortune 500 company in order to be a Fortune 500 company. And I think that's what Michelle was talking about. Her experiences is in the industry and as far as working with corporate America, and that was one of the things we were discussing. And, again, Jamie, I really appreciate everything, and you and I will get back together, I guess, on tomorrow.
That'll be great. Thank you so much. You all have a blessed evening.
You too.
You too.
Okay. And, Michelle, we were just talking about that, about how we need to, you know, mirror the corporate America. I mean, in order for us to be a successful company, we really need to have the same support levels of systems that corporate America has in order for us to be, you know, if you're in business, you're in business. I think we were talking about that earlier, that structure is most important in, you know, Fortune 500 companies and, or, you know, major corporations that you worked with. And that structure has to come in place at all times in order for a business to have sustainability, right?
I totally agree. I think one of the key factors in maintaining sustainability is keeping the lines of communication open. I know in corporate, in the businesses I've worked in, is managers and employees are so open to having things like brown bag lunches and information sessions on ways to better communicate change and things that need to happen to make a business more successful. Due to the increased use of internet, a lot of people oftentimes like to communicate over the internet and exchange ideas, those type of things. And I know I've said this a couple weeks back, but I think it's just really key that we need to communicate with one another and not really be afraid to really speak out on what's happening, those kind of things, and not feeling like we have to leave it to our supervisors or the managers to really do all the talking. And people like a change of pace. They like to have those breaks where they can get out of the cubicle and get in the conference room and kind of hash it out in a brown bag lunch and really hear more about okay, what's changing in the world today and what kind of things do people need. I really appreciated Jamie's presentation about Aflac. I mean, one of the reasons why I asked her about what kinds of changes have happened, you know, within the company is because I really wanted to get a sense of, okay, what is Aflac doing to reach out more to the broader community, and I was really impressed to hear that, okay, they are reaching out to Japan and other companies. And I know in the corporations that I've worked in, they're always striving to not only stay local or do business in the U.S., but also reach out internationally. And so I think it's just so key to really have multiple networks where that communication is so strong and stable, so people are kind of in the know on, you know,
yeah,
what kinds of things can we do differently.
I think we got Sherilia Coleman on, and she has an enormous amount of experience in as a corporate individual and as well as a business owner and executive director of the the CATS program in Nashville, Tennessee. Sherry, if you can expound on that kind of socialization that we're talking about that has to be implemented inside our businesses in order for us to, you know, again, mirror a little bit of corporate America, but be creative in that change. If you have any other additional comments based on what your experience is on that.
Hold on. I know this don't sound like Sherry. This is Mario.
Oh, wow.
Her husband. No,
I know marriage was bounding, but wow.
I know. It's like, okay, she just dropped down an octave. But, no, she just had a quick call. Hold on. Let me get it for you. Let me put you on mute. Because
okay.
She thought you wanted to talk about the Young Musicians Program.
Yeah,
we
can go over that, too, because the methodology in the foundation of the Young Musicians Program is exactly what Michelle and everybody else is really talking about. You know, I'd like to go into a little bit about the program that you structure, because I know you came on at the very beginning. And I want you all to really, really kind of understand exactly how this man has been able to cultivate these young people and from all nationalities and rear a foundation that speaks to how businesses really are built. And so you might not get it until the very end, but go ahead, Mario. Please tell us about the program that you have in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Well, the Young Musicians Program is basically the concept, I guess, was first of all set up to teach kids how to create music using this program called Reasons. But the overall concept is really to introduce them into technology. I mean, when we first started the program in Tennessee, half these kids didn't really even know that much about computers because they weren't privy to that type of equipment at home. Now, some of us have computers, but being able to go in and let them actually see a laptop or a desktop as a tool that they can construct from, as opposed to something they're just playing games on, was a whole new concept to them. So basically, they got a chance to really look at the computer from a different mindset. And then once I got them comfortable with that, that's when I started taking them into the program, and they actually started learning how, first of all, how to do beats. But then from beats, we start moving into, okay, let's start working on composition for songs. And then from there, we started building the music around the beat. And then what we did, okay, now we have this concept. Let's teach you guys how to write songs. They said, well, Mr. Coleman, we've never written a song before. All you got to do is just an idea. It's a concept. Basically, what is it that you like to do? And so from there, I start teaching them the concepts and basically how to write songs. And then from there, what happened is we brought them together as a unit, and they started working on each other's project. You know, at first everybody was laughing at everybody's song, but then as they start understanding the intricacies of putting together a song, mixing it, producing it, or whatever, then all of a sudden they begin to respect each individual's individual artistry and how they approach their project. And all of a sudden now everybody's working on everybody's track. They're singing on different tracks. They're coming up with hooks for other people's songs. And then from that point.
Hold on one second. And this is what I want to take these points and kind of go with this. That's what Michelle was actually just stating, that you have to, these are the type of forms that, you know, even these young folks, they you know, we do this as business owners and as adults. Instead of us embracing each other's individual talents, we, you know, start to mark each other and not try to come together in a uniform manner. And
right.
A system has to be placed in our businesses. And this is why I'm just kind of hosting this, so we can look at this strategically and say, hey, you know what, we need to be able to tell Giovanna, you really need to become a general contractor, Giovanna. You really need to get your general contractor's license, and you really need to have it at least by next year, because the truth be said, they're going to shut you down if they can, and you know, because we still have a Republican state, and they're going to be absolutely mad, you know. And so you need to pass that along to as many sisters as possible and say, look, by the way, you really need to go after your GC license. So instead of us start talking, well, you know, NCWCC is doing this little thing over here, we need to do the same thing they're doing. No, we all need to come together. And what you did was you brought those young people together. And at the end of
right.
the you know, as you were going forward, I know the story said, I guess, why I just want to interrupt you. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, see, the thing was is that, and what I did was I didn't alienate each one, because there were some who, I don't want to be a producer. I just want to sing. Or, you know, I don't really want to sing. I just want to do beats. Well, I said, well, that's great. That doesn't mean that you need to be over here doing it. I mean, you can be over there to create your project. But the thing is let's bring, after you do your beat, you know, somebody else might hear who's a singer and say, you know what, I want to work with that beat. And then somebody else who does the lyrics say, well, I'll help you with the lyrics. And so I created this forum where basically they can come in and infuse their ideas. And the whole concept, basically, it was music, but the overall concept was everybody coming together and working together as a team in their area of expertise and then respecting each the individual's area of expertise because they got a chance to actually sit down and see how this individual worked as a lyric writer and how this other individual worked as somebody that was putting together beats. So, I mean, from that point on, I think because they understood how each other did what they did or how they came to their final outcomes, there was a mutual admiration and respect that was achieved through all parties. And that was really the biggest thing that I really wanted to achieve was to have them work together as a unified entity, you know what I mean? And then from there, we went into, like, well, how would you promote your CD? Because after that, we burned the project down, the CD, and then I took them into Photoshop and taught them how to work with graphics and images so they could market themselves and also putting together, like, sound equipment. If we have a show, they're responsible for actually getting the sound equipment and putting it, setting it up, making sure all the wires are hooked up and doing the sound check. And I would time them, and they would have to do it in like 15 minutes. Each one had an individual section of that sound equipment that they were responsible for putting together. And then I would change it till everybody knew the next person's job. And it was amazing. I mean, and it got to the point to where there's grown people that could look at this setup that I had and not put it together. And these kids could come in and put it together in like 12 to 15 minutes, and I might have to go and maybe change two wires around. And sometimes I didn't even have to do that, and they were already doing the sound check. And then we went into video and these different things. And the whole concept was basically for them to understand, like I said, how to respect each other and to really make them functionable citizens out here in this society. So we found a common point of interest, and then we expounded on that, and then we created a philosophy, you know what I mean, where they were learning about working together as a team so they could take this concept and understand what it is and take it, you know, out there into the world with them.
And I appreciate that. Let me share this with and this is why I wanted to call her from 330-703. Let me tell you what we've been, and the contractors that's on the phone and the business owners that's in contracting that's online with us, this is what Mario actually had. This is why I was so excited that these children were able to get the concept, and we as adults, you know, in our late early 30s and late 50s don't get it. He said that they came together in fusion, right? And that's what we've been talking about, Mr. Porter. We're talking about working together, right? Nicole, we've been always talking about how we need to respect each other's talents and their expertise, and that way we can joint venture each other into projects and working on projects collectively together, and then having a philosophy and understanding of that. And I think, I guess, if you all are, you know, kind of stating, you know, well, what is she talking about? This is the concept of us functioning as, not just business owner, but as a coalition, where we say, yeah, we're the National Coalition of Women of Color in Construction, but our methodology is what I'm actually. You see me bringing on different people from different backgrounds, but we are all connected in some way. Our socialization and our social network makes us stronger than anything, and that was what Obama actually did. His strategy was to bring the masses together as one, and infuse them, and then make them work together and respect each other while they were working together. And then he has all these experts that's around him now. Even if he don't even have one black person on his cabinet, he has an infusion of people who respect each other that's never been done before. You know what I'm saying? In the last 8 years, and these are the acceptance and the most important parts of change, you guys, that I'm trying to kind of, you know, throw out there to you all and say, this is we have to attract this different value system of business in order and make it a new model. And that's what you see, that description, if you guys are looking online, that's the show topic. I kind of want, I always go back to that so we won't get far away from the topic as possible. And I appreciate everybody calling in. And Mr. Porter, is that some of the things that you and I have been talking about as far as the contractors up there in Akron? Mr. Porter? Okay.
I wanted to jump. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to jump in quick about furthering commenting to further your comment about the change in the mentality. I think one other big problem is a lot of businesses and organizations. Reason why people don't really come together and talk and really work out various issues is because there's been this practice for, I would say, for many years. People do things, and it's so competitive. I want to produce this product to make it better than so-and-so, or a lot of people are out to create monopolies, if you will. I think there's just this mindset of feeling like I have to outwin or outbeat the other guy. And what I liked about that description of the gentleman who has the music initiative with young people is that they came together not with this mindset of competition or I want to do better than you or I want to produce more than you, but really working together. And I think this has been an ongoing problem with large corporations and other businesses is the fear of being wiped out or the fear of looking like the loser, lack of trust. I think those are some really key factors in why there's a lot of hesitation among people as far as working together because people have been burned or people were told, well, yeah, I'll work with you, and then they turn around and take ownership of the project or the product. And, yeah, this is going to be an ongoing problem, but I think it's just a matter of taking time to build that trust and really getting to know the stakeholders and the partners at the table and that everyone at the table understands his or her role in the process.
I think, too, I just wanted to interject right quick. Another thing that really helped us move along, and I think even with as I look at Mr. Obama's campaign, is basically having a subset of objectives that allows immediate gratification. Like I would take the kids in, okay, you know, today this is what we're going to do as a team to write a song. The next day, this is what we're going to do as a team to accomplish this, as a team to accomplish that. A lot of times, I mean, what we need to do is to have an infusion of talent because, and also that lets us find out who's committed and who's not. If we have like a subset of objectives that we're achieving right away, so there's some degree of movement and there's some degree of gratification to see what that team has done together as a unit. I think then it kind of solidifies the fact that okay, if we move together as a unit, this is what we can accomplish. Now, like you said, everybody's not going to flow like that, but I think it does allow you to find out who's committed and who's not, you know what I'm saying? And that's what really has helped me out as far as when I've gone into different environments is really having a subset and then making each individual within that organization basically responsible. This is a team effort, so if one drops the ball in some situations, it may cause everybody. It's not going to cost them something tremendously, but a lesson is being learned there about, you know, about understanding what your objective is and being able to accomplish it in a timely fashion.
And I think that's another point. Ms. Freeman has been since retired, but I think you experienced a lot of that in some of the volunteering things that you have go through, I guess, in some of the things that you do, I guess, at the church and even working at the post office all these years. I think, Ms. Freeman, you have always exposed us to the fact that this is a team effort and when one have, all have. And that's our motto as a family-owned business, is that, you know, there's us, and then there's them. And so us, we come together, you know, no matter what, and have a fusion that gives us gratification immediately. And then we have, you know, some of the things that Ms. Freeman has told us and taught us through the years is that, you know, you have to work together. And mm-hmm. And everybody can't be in charge, you know, as much as I want it to be in charge all the time. It, you know, I'm that's just not my expertise. Some of the things that I do for our business is what I've been groomed to do, and some of the things that Janora does for the business is what she's been groomed to do. And then those are the things that we relatively have been trying to stress to a lot of business owners. And a lot of people relate business success as having millions of dollars in the bank. And so what's so funny is that those million-dollar companies are no longer in existence. Those banks who closed their doors on us and said we couldn't get those loans no longer exist. You know, a lady told me on the when we were leaving work yesterday, the Bible says the first should be last and the last should be first. So the only thing you have is your drivenness to work together in a way that creates a change, not just in what you're doing as a person with the program, but right now you really have put a model together that just speaks to all business owners. And that's why I was so excited, Mario, when you told me about the program. I was like, oh my God, this is the concept of functioning as a business. And I never could be able to explain it and wholeheartedly to a lot of people, but this is how we've sustained a business, you know, for 20 years. And I tell people all the time, no, we don't, you know, we do a lot of things and we've had a lot of experiences, but we're still here as a business, you know. And that's the sustainable level that you're teaching these young folks. That what you're giving them is something that is going to become our foundation for our youth to carry us past the things that these idiots put us in, you know, the last 8 to 10 years that we've been, you know, gouging each other, not working together, greed, not focusing on respecting each other, another set on greed, and then that substandard, that subset of objectives that that you have to put in place for a lot of people, right, which gives them immediate gratification. Those levels, those are really the principal levels of sustaining a business. Am I not right, Ms. Freeman?
Yes, that's correct. Each person comes to the organization or to the company, you know, with different ideas and different things that they're good at, and they pull together as one and support mm-hmm. each other. When you do that, then you have a entity of a whole.
Right. And I think, too, that and what's really important, too, is what I really try to move the kids into is a mindset of really this being a philosophy, a way of life, not just something that you turn on when you come here. This is something that you take with you and implement into your psyche, because it's almost so simplistic that it's elusive, you know. But I would explain to them, this is the task that we have to accomplish today. Now, there are some days when they're goofing off and we don't get it done, and I bring it to their attention. But our success rate is greater when they understand that, okay, if we work together as a team, and then after on the days that we do accomplish it, I make it a point to sit everybody down. Now, at the beginning of the day, this was our objective, and we've been able to accomplish that. How do you guys feel about that? Well, I feel good about that, you know. And I said, this is what happens when you guys work together as a team. Now, I give them their little arguing time to do whatever they need to do, you know what I mean, and just blow off steam or whatever. And that's fine, because if you got some differences or whatever, let's not pretend like they're not there. They're there. So get it on out the way, and then but when it comes time to work then or to move toward our objective, this is our philosophy. It has to be implemented into our psyches, because it's really working together is – there really should be no distinction between business and the philosophy of how to move together as as a unified entity, or, you know what I mean, everybody come together as one. I mean, it's in the Bible, it's in spirituality. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I think we make it complicated through our little idiosyncrasies or greed or this, that, and the other. That's what makes it complex, but in and of itself, it's a pretty simple philosophy. Just treat people the way you want to be treated and move together when you're in each other's space, respect each other's space, and just move forward. And, you know, but we're dealing with human elements or whatever, but I'm just trying to, with these kids, is I try to make it, even though it's complex, I mean, I study psychology, so I could go off into some complex, you know what I mean, psychological thing, but I just simplify it. Look, this is what we got to do. This is how we'll do it. And if it don't work out, this is why it didn't work out. I ask them, well, why do you guys think it didn't work today? And they know. You know what I mean? So I think it's just a matter of, like I said, I think if each individual, if we're, first of all, like you said, if we're working in a cohesive unit, if each individual has a chance to express themselves at a certain point in time, like you said, we got to have meetings. Everybody needs to feel that their input is relevant because they have to even learn how to give their input. You know what I mean? And then as we understand how each other moves, it's just like in a business, you know, everybody, you know, people think the accountant ain't really important because they got a little place over there around the corner down in the basement. But, I mean, if they were really to just maybe just see him work and just understand how every component, you know, relates to the other, I think there'd be, you know, a greater deal of respect. But I could go on and on and on about that. But basically the philosophy is about really understanding how each individual is important to the overall objective. And that's what I did with the kids.
And Mario, what you did that works well is you created an environment, a welcoming environment, where the young people feel their feedback and ideas are that they can be shared, that there's a safety net that you created for them. And I think that's key in all forms of business. I think one of the reasons why people are changing jobs so much, where there's so much turnover in a lot of different businesses, is because people have felt a loss of security. They started feeling like they were no longer welcome as far as their value systems, as far as what they can bring to the table. They felt that a lot of those things had to be compromised. And what you just shared about the typical workday with your young people, it just really shows that you created an atmosphere where they not only feel comfortable, but they really feel that they have something to bring, and they don't have to compromise it to meet a bottom line.
No. And I think it's the other thing, too. I mean, because I've been in the workplace, and I think the other thing, too, is I think another thing that really has individuals disenchanted with the workforce is when they come to their boss or whatever and they say, you know what, I'd like to move up, or what do I need to do to advance? And they're just kind of like brushed aside, look, you're over there, don't worry about that. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
Where is the desire to want to give more time? If, you know, now some people are content maybe to just, because you got people that, okay, this is where I want to be, this is my mindset, and that's fine. But I think by nature, man is designed to evolve. I mean, I believe in the creator, but I'm just saying, I'm just using evolution as a, you know, if that was the case, we'd still be microorganisms in the water, whatever. But I'm just saying, we were designed to evolve. Even if you believe in religion, I mean, hey, when Jesus was here, we was walking around in sandals, we had cars, we had none of that. So we're just designed to evolve. So we have to respect that in each individual and nurture that. So we can get individuals that feel like, wow, this is something, I really feel good about going to work today because now I'm more involved than what I was. I'm not just here to get a paycheck. I'm here because I'm here as a participant. I got ideas. I mean, they've listened to my ideas. They've implemented them. And now I got a stake in this. I got an investment in this situation because I'm being listened to and my ideas are being implemented. You know what I mean? And I think that's important, too. You can't dehumanize the people below you and expect them to give you 100% when you basically just just dismiss them. You know what I'm saying?
And I think, Mr. Porter, I think that was one of the things that we were talking about in terms of the changes that the associations that you have up in Ohio, is that they do not count the minority contractors as no more than a number, and that there's no strategy to implement any kind of infusion into their system so that, you know, companies could progress and become bonded and things of that nature, if I'm correct or not, right?
And
Are you talking to me, Karima?
Yes, sir.
And that is true. We don't have the partnership. It is there. It's not there. It's gone, and it doesn't look like it's gonna return.
Wow.
So, but we have to keep hitting hard. We have to keep hitting hard because if we push hard enough, we all push together. We can make it.
Yeah.
If one of us at a time, it won't happen. So that's why I'm all for the coalition. I'm all for, you know, being together and trying to make sure that we come together and move this mountain together. And that's the only way it's going to happen.
What I've experienced in talking with the folks in Ohio, you guys, is that they do not, and they have no intentions from the commission to the Akron Urban League and to any of that structure that's there. They have no intent on creating a concept of functioning as no further than what they've been functioning as there. That means the primary people who've been getting contracts, the primary, I call it gatekeepers, the African-American folks like Michael Davis and folks at the commission, those individuals are making great scales on their level, but the people that I know that are not getting the work that they're supposed to. And it's not just about work. It's about having an infusion of a society of a race of people. Minorities in Ohio do not even exist in terms of what their structure is. And because they don't exist, they can't be measured, you know. And because when you can't be measured, then you, when people disrespect you, then because you're not, since you don't count, then who are you? You're nobody to them. You know, we were told just recently that we don't need your help in Ohio. Our niggers are very good at where they are. You know, they're not asking for your help. We have them comfortably secured inside their own place in their place. You know, that is pretty much what they what Dr. Breedwell said to me. And they have a bonding program that have no sustainability. They don't want anybody coming in from no parts of the country, right, in order to help other minorities, because we only know our experiences are different from anybody that's a majority. Our experiences are different. Our requirements are different. And if you don't have people who are successfully standing in front of those people, just like Mr. Coleman is standing in front of his folks and giving them, you know, rearing them on and giving them a set of values that make sense to them, because they're working together in a system that, you know, creates immediate gratification. There's a philosophy there. People, those young people started to respect each other. They make sure that you all don't respect each other in Ohio. So basically, that's been the plan for separation. That's been the plan for divide and conquer. But no longer are we going to stand by and let a group of people just continue to just devour a group of people. It's only a handful of people that are holding back successful companies spearheading out of Ohio. I just wanted to kind of share that, put that on record for that. And I wanted to just comment that one of the things my sister used to tell us when we were young apprentices in Chicago, and I remember this, Janora, really, really emphatically, is that I was an apprentice and Janora was a journeyman. And they put us in the concrete together, and it was a lot of concrete for us to pour, and we were pulling some concrete. And she knew, and I was young and very, dumb. And she said, you know, you need to look at me and work with me and don't work against me. So we were riding off all this concrete, and everybody was standing on the outside watching these two black girls pull all this concrete back and riding it off. Well, she got so angry at me because I was working her to death. You know, and she stood up and said, work with me, don't work against me. you know, we're in this together because, you know, I couldn't get a journeyman to work with me because I was so gung-ho that I knew everything, and the only person that could have been assigned to me was my own sister, and they renamed us. I think you were JoJo and I was Bobo Janor. You like that, Maggie, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, but my point of it is that we have learned to work together and define a lot of things. I like to share with everybody that our experiences of the preceding years has made us stronger as young women. You know, I have all but nothing but everything to say about my mom that, you know, if it wasn't for her, all of this would not be possible. And if it wasn't for Janora, a lot of other stuff wouldn't be possible. And so, you know, I have a strong family. I'm a brother and all that. And we have the support level of a family-owned business that, you know, when one falls, you got to knock out all of us, you know. And then my social network is way bigger than a lot of people can even imagine. So as the shows begin to progress and we get more callers and we get more directions on some of the things that we need to do in terms of challenging individuals to come aboard and talk about their experiences, like Michelle was saying, you know, a lot of people don't want to expose themselves. They'd rather sit back and suffer in silence, you know. Why? Why? You know, when we're all in this together. You know, I met a lady today out of Philadelphia, and I just happened to call her. She's a part of our Center for Women Business Research folks that was a part of this study, and we have access to each other, and none of them are calling each other. We you know, 183 of us spent a day's wage in supporting this research, and no one is following up with each other. You know, no one is coming together and calling, and that is why we put the coalition together, because most of the women that was a part of this research, you guys, the requirements, you have to have $250,000 in sales, and some folks had $50 million to $100 million. So there are women out there, women of color, who have that kind of, you know, volume, but they sat and talked about their barriers. They quoted some of their obstacles, you know. And that's all been documented, you know. And I'm looking at some things, and I want to take over the show, but it's very, very important that we talk about that the lack of knowledge and information sets, you know, women of color up for failure. And you know, however, many women continue to market their products and services to these corporations and agencies. Unfortunately, they are further hampered by a lack of relationships with insiders. And again, for most part, they encounter people who are not of the same race or gender. And if they do end up connecting with someone of their own race or gender, it is rarely all of the above. They will be sent to see the only black person in the organization who is in charge of a diversity. Often this is not the person who has the decision-making authority when it comes to letting the contract. So they hit another dead end. So these are documented facts of what these women who, you know, have sustainable income, right? And this is documented research that has never been done before that states that these are, I mean, and this has been the experience. I know this has been the experience for, Mr. Porter, are you online still or no? Okay. But this has been the experience for, you know, not just you know, companies like that are minority, but all sorts of companies that do not fit that look and all. And it's a shame that that's the type of system that's in place. The system that Mr. Coleman has put in place is what corporate America has in place for corporate America. And I know there's discriminatory practices in corporate America, but they know how much they can't. They know what they know. There's a glass ceiling somewhere, but it's been increased in height, if I'm not mistaken, Michelle.
Yep, that's exactly right.
But you know what, Karima, where I got the concept of immediate gratification is funny. You're not going to believe this, but I worked with my a friend of mine as a finisher, and we actually went in, and so I got a chance to actually do construction as a laborer. And, you know, okay, so you guys all know what I'm saying is when you go into a site and it's just a pile of dirt, and by the time you leave, it's a mall.
So this is something that you have left behind. I mean, you know what I'm saying? For years and years and years, people will be going into this thing. I mean, I can drive by and say, hey, see that mall over there? I did the drywall in that. You know what I mean? And people, and, you know, I saw guys, you know, pouring the cement, doing the painting, you know what I mean, doing the texturizing, coming in, doing electricity. We work hard. That's hard work. You know what I'm saying? That is some – a laborer works hard. I mean, I didn't have to carry mud. I mean, you know what I mean, go out there and hose down. You name it. I had – because I was a laborer. That is some hard-ass work. I'm sorry. That's, and then it's hot, too. You know what I mean? So – but the thing is, after it's said and done, you look at this and say, wow, you know what I'm saying? This is some – you can see the fruits of your labor as a construction person. And that's where I got the concept that it's like, well, I need to kind of like construct a program or an idea for that day and let us see it done. And because that's where I got it from, this construction, man. You know what I mean? Just sitting back and not keep talking about it, but just sitting back and saying, wow. We did that room right there. Oh, wow, you know, we did that whole strip mall. That's amazing to me, man. You know, we built a whole church.
And that's the thing that I think the it's a gentleman, Leonardo Ducci, is one of our consultants, and he was stating that shows the philosophical understanding of why do we do things in construction the way that we do. Why is contracting set up the way that it is? Why do we have to go through the vendor situation and set yourself as a vendor? There's a process in all of this, but we do understand that that instant gratification after that building has been done is something that I can always sit back and my sister and I could sit back and say, oh, we did that bridge. I remember rubbing that bridge and falling off the lift and being rushed to the hospital. You know, yeah. I never forget that, you know.
Everybody comes together. Everybody comes together because you got, I mean, before we even get in there, I mean, you know, you got the electricians, you got the plumbers, you know what I mean? We came in, we doing the drywall, you got the painters. I mean, and then everybody has to make sure that their job is done well enough for the next group to come in. And then there's times when everybody's up in there bumping into each other, you know what I mean, knocking over each other's ladders, just all kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But that is I mean, construction is I guess it's the perfect metaphor for a team effort. And
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just kind of almost a hypocrisy that you have to work together as a team in construction to get the project done, but yet you can't work together as a team. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy.
It makes a lot of sense. I was just asking Michelle that those are the structures that's in place in corporate America. That structure's the relationship is, I just want to keep going back, that everything is all, the whole philosophy is all structured the same, if I'm not mistaken, Michelle. It's just the whole thing. There's a team succession level that one person does this job and get passed to the next person. Am I correct?
Well, I think it varies depending on the type of industry. I know I've worked in architectural companies, medical companies, financial companies, and you know, a lot of big corporations, they have this mission. But the problem, you know, the bigger you get, sometimes people develop various interpretations of this vision and get it confused, you know, and then later develop different views on, okay, what's the bottom line really is. So in one respect, a lot of big corporations, they have a lot of structure and different technical work policies, that sort of thing. But when it comes down to core values and teamwork, I think there's a lot of conflict there, especially when you're dealing with people in different forms of management. You know, one group, for example, with one company I worked with, one group, they were really successful in producing a certain product to restore health. And the managers involved, they were really on board with what everybody brought to the table. Then you had other areas where you had management that felt, okay, I want things done this way, but the people in the work teams really were not on board with the manager's philosophy or way of doing things. So the end result was they really couldn't get the ground running. They couldn't really make the work happen, and there was just it seems like they just stayed in the initial foundation type of planning and stuff. So I see this a lot in large corporations is when people feel like they have to make a decision based on, okay, my manager really wants this, and a lot of people feel, well, I have to please my manager, and if I'm going to get that raise or get that promotion, I have to do it this way and that way. So there's a lot of, I really feel there's a lot of conflicts
politics.
Of interest and politics, if you will, and it really takes a certain person to be able to deal with those dynamics. And I hear people complain all the time. I hear people say, oh, I can't stand the politics here, or, you know, I can't get anything done because there's this back and forth bickering about this little thing and stuff. So I think a lot of times, too, big corporations and organizations, even nonprofit organizations, really need a lot of time with conflict management. And it's sad to say, but it really is true, because when there's a lot of conflict or disagreement in styles or whatever, things don't get done. And it really hurts the business. It really hurts a lot of different things. But, yeah, sometimes going back to your initial question, it starts off very structured at first, and then it's like a puzzle. Slowly pieces start coming apart, and then it's a matter of putting in the time to put those pieces back together. It, you know, not everybody follows the same structure, if that makes sense at all.
It absolutely does. I think it.
Hello?
Our industry, it does make a lot of sense, and I was just trying to, kind of compartmentalize the functions that a lot of small business owners don't really get it. Even when they've grown their businesses, they really don't get it. They struggle through their everyday life, and they feel they're successful because they're making a bunch of money. But if you're so stressed out, mean, you know what I mean? Just bitter about things. Some of the things that I wanted to share was that, you know, in some of the systems in which we were talking about, as far as the form was concerned, is that the women who have gotten to a certain place are so bitter. They said, "I got mine, and I'm not going to reach back and help you."
But that's the reason why I want to cut in. You know, a lot of people feel that once they get what they want, they do not have to reach back and help anyone else. But in order to make it in life, you must reach back and help someone else. And they're saying they are in it by themselves, but no, they're not, because it takes a variety of people coming together in order to make what they have to work. They might be up today, but, you know, perhaps tomorrow they won't.
Okay. All right.
I think another problem, too, so many people in the workforce, whether if it's small business, large businesses, they see something and immediately there's this feeling of, I got to take ownership of this.
Right.
What I mean by that, let's say you have a particular project. I'll use a construction project. You have a new development that you are trying to build, a shopping development or something like that, and someone looks at the plan, and immediately there's an instinct, oh, I want to take ownership of this section. I want to be responsible for that. I really feel there's been this philosophy instilled in people, especially I see this in a lot of big businesses, is people having this feeling like I have to take ownership of that to reach a certain goal or success rate or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be a part of a particular part of the project or whatever, but when you're working with other people and you manifest that, you know, when you really make it an issue, I'm in charge of this, so I'm going to, you know, take ownership of it, it really creates a kind of a competitive and even somewhat threatening situation among the other people involved, and that's when problems start. Because then people are going to feel, oh, this person wants to take all the credit for it and run with it. So sometimes those problems arise very early on. And if it's not established early that everyone involved in that particular project takes equal credit or all of them is pretty much the owners of it, it can be problematic if it's not established early on.
And we call that there's an entrance understand plan, and there's an exit strategy when you partner up with each other, and then there's a strategy just in case there's a problem within the project. And a lot of people don't understand that that's a part of planning out a succession plan in construction. A lot of people don't understand succession planning has nothing to do with going to get an attorney and stating, oh, I got an attorney that's going to teach me about succession planning. Construction succession planning, it implements different kinds of profiles when you're inside a project, anything. And you know what you were saying, Michelle, you know, Esther had that problem in the Bible. You know, I don't know if anybody knows anything about Esther, but that's pretty much was her thing, and she got her husband to start looking at the other guy's property over there and stole his land. And next thing, you know, prophecy said that, you know, the dogs would eat her bones, and then her head never got ate because she had all that makeup on or whatever. So that stems back from human nature. You know, I mean, this stems back from the mindset of people. And understanding, you know, the experiences of each person. And that's why I suggest to everybody, when you do things, know the people that you do work with, and understand their position and understand their concepts. The one thing that I do know that that we have done in terms of following up with just trying to mirror a corporate level of thinking is just having who's in charge. You know, who does this better than the next person? You know, is it, you know, do we have whatever we don't have in place? We go try to, you know, categorize that and put that person in place and say, okay, we need a project manager for this project, or we need this. So, you know, a lot of us try to wear all hats and make all the money, you know, and as far as construction and contracting, they, you know, like I was saying, I met a lady today and she said, you know, she wears all the hats in her company. And I felt really sorry for her because she stated that, you know, she had gotten cancer and that she was battling with that, and that, you know, it's just her and her son, and she's a one-woman team and been in business 20 years. And I think that's a sad thing when you don't have anybody to share your business goals and some of the ups and downs and all that. So when you build a corporation, that's why I keep going back to you, Michelle, is that, you know, and when you're a CEO of an organization, you know, that's not just you, your company. There's, you know, the president, vice president, then you got the board of directors and all those people. And then you have that whole succession level of people that's below them, you know. And
right,
I think,
exactly.
You know, people don't get that. And those people have to be paid, too. And everything has been about me, I, when you get into contracting. Yeah, they were able to you know, get a business. That's why I know this may sound ugly or whatever, but everybody don't need to have a business. That's what the Bush administration really did. They drove a lot of people into, you know, I'm a contractor, I'm a builder, I'm a developer, I'm a real estate, I'm a investor. And where are they at now? You know, I mean, seriously, for 20 some years, we've seen companies come and go, you know, just come and go. And you know, and they like, you know, like Ms. Friedman said, you know, you have to reach back and help each other. And the only way that we can sustain a level of change is that we know that we have to have a different value system, and that model has to be implemented inside ourselves first. I think when you have a lot of people that work in corporate America, they're fine working in that cubicle for 20 years, 25. How many years have you worked in corporate America to retire? 30.
No, there's no such thing as retirement now.
Really?
So I guess I need to go back to work then, huh?
No, you're good.
In corporations, no such thing as retire. You have to realize that where's your numbers up when you get laid off, where the economy is today.
True.
You know?
Actually, there are no permanent jobs anymore either, and the high paying jobs, they're gone to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to actually open a business for yourself to make your money for yourself. And you know, you need to get involved with other people, so you know, working together. It comes back to working together.
Exactly. Not only that, people like myself that I don't have my own business or anything. I think what's also key too is really staying alert with what's going on in the industry and really be aware of all the changes and not be afraid of change. I've met with a former president of a nonprofit organization here in Minneapolis, and he made this. I had a meeting with him privately, and he said to me, one of the hardest things for him, you know, you be with an organization for so many years, and you see the economy and the business structures changing, and he said, trying to change into a totally different role is one of the hardest things he ever had to do, but he realized he had to do it. So I think what's also key is not to really be afraid of change. I really feel there's going to always be various opportunities and businesses around, but I think a lot of times we tend to get into this rut of feeling, well, this is all I know. This is the only trade I have. This is my only ability. There's nothing else for me. You know, I had to tell myself recently that I can't just focus on staying in a particular area, which for many years has been in administration. And I had to tell myself, okay, if I'm going to grow professionally, don't feel like the only way I'm going to grow is to stay in administration, because there are other opportunities. I mean, you hear that saying all the time, the fields are vast, and it's true. I know Janora was commenting earlier about, there's no such thing as retirement anymore. And to some extent, that's really true. This is why it's so key that we learn how to invest our money early and to really set aside a nest egg for ourselves so we can retire comfortably and properly, but to also educate each other on investing and how to do that, because there's nothing wrong with changing jobs or changing industries, but being proactive for your future, that is important. And I know that's something, me personally, I have to get better on, is really making better choices and better investments for my future, because we just never know what can happen.
And we see that already with not just the economy, but folks who did were investing in the stocks and trade and all the. I think any kind of person that has a statue has to start looking at. I think this has been a wake up call for everybody. Those who lost millions of dollars and didn't, you know, jump off of something and burn themselves up or hang themselves. they you know, I mean, it wasn't none of. I'm sure it wasn't a lot of us doing it, but you know, our experiences are different. We handle things a lot different than anybody else on the planet. I think. Our experience as women of color, and I think that's just any woman of color, doesn't have any, just not nothing to say about the white sisters, but just women of color, we've experienced so much and we are discriminated against so strongly all over the world. We have some we've been really working hard to bring some national connections, to international connections together with China and different other places, the sisters that's in India and Africa. And so we're working really hard to have an international coalition of women of color as well. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know, it does not take, you know, 10,000 women to be screaming about their objectives. All it takes is one voice to emulate what everybody else has been thinking. I guess we look at the fact that a lot of people did a lot of planning, but, you know, all the best plans in the world, you know, they fall. I mean, everybody is looking, the world is looking at the United States, and we're trillions and trillions of dollars in debt, owe everybody. And who would have thought that, you know, 110 years, 109 years to the date that there'd be a black president? They planned for us to never, ever come off the plantation. So, I mean, the best plan that's ever been made, unless God is involved in it, nothing can happen. And I just wanted to share that with everybody. We got 4 minutes left into the show, and I want everybody to realize that this is a beginning of a look that is going to change the face of contracting. It's going to change the face of the construction industry. We are the change. We started talking about, you know, change a long time ago, but I think we have a very good sense of being and style. And I always try to let people know that our motto is a charge to keep, I have, and God to glorify. So, and I also want everybody to know that we are servants, and then we're here to serve and serve faithfully. And I want to thank all the callers that stayed on with us, and the folks that's in the chat room, and the callers that did call in earlier. And I hope everybody tune in next week for a very interesting show. We're going to recap everything and all the people that we've talked to over the past several weeks, and try to head up what we call a forum to solve one problem at a time. So I want to thank everybody, and God bless everybody, and thank you for calling in and having all your suggestions and solutions. And God bless everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Could you let me sleep? As long as I see your face, I want to be awake.
I count sheep around.